former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonantoni, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Welcome in, everybody. Tuesday edition of the Lombardi Line from downtown Las Vegas and our Circus Sportsbook studios. I'm Ben Wilson in for Stormy Bonantoni. Michael Lombardi is here. Very busy, Michael Lombardi. I saw you up and early. Follow the money this morning, Michael, because we've got a lot of news to break down here in the NFL. At least one potential trade being reported from late last night we'll get into in a second. So a lot for us to cover today as we are into preseason week 1 week. First game's coming up on Thursday. And on the show, Tim Murray. He'll be joining us, talk a little college football later on in hour number two. We go into Michael's top five quarterback rooms entering 2024. Will Hill joins us in the next half hour from the Shoulda Bet More podcast. Always great to have Will on, talking a cornucopia of sports. A lot of his takes, too, on the NFL preseason. And we'll get into news or noise here in 15 minutes to kick off the show. But we start with the news of the day, Michael. The report coming from Matt Maiocco of NBC Sports Bay Area late last night that wide receiver Brandon Ayuk for San Francisco, who we have known is wanted out, currently only under contract through the end of his rookie deal, makes a little over $14 million this year were he to have stayed. But the report is a framework deal in place with Cleveland and New England. Before we get into the particulars, Michael, of what it would mean for either of those two teams, just the scale of the report in general here, 1 to 10, how much are you buying it as it stands right now, the way it was laid out?
Well, I would say a 10 on the fact that San Francisco's had enough, right? That they've tried to sign player to a contract. They can't seem to reason with the player. As an executive in the league, one of the things that I've always experienced is when you have a player that's unreasonable or doesn't have self-awareness or thinks he's better than he really is, those contracts are hard. And if some other team wants to pay $5 million above the market value for a receiver because they think it's going to change their franchise, why not take advantage? Now, I think what San Francisco wants back is an offensive player and draft picks. I think that's pretty clear. I think they'll end up settling for draft picks. I don't know about the rumors about who's involved in these trades today. Just before we came on, there was a, you know, Brandon Ayuk trade to New England, and Matt Judon and Kendrick Bourne were both not on the field today for the Patriots. What does that mean? I don't know. I don't know what it means. I know this. There's two things that have to take place. A deal has to be consummated between the between a team and satisfy the 49ers. That's probably fairly easy. The next step is you've got to satisfy Ayuk in terms of how much per year and how much guaranteed and how's the spread of the money. That's a challenge. That's a challenge because Brandon Ayuk thinks he's an elite receiver when he has no numbers to support it. So I think this is going to be fascinating. Look, I didn't think they would get here, but like I've been saying on my podcast, I've been saying on this show, at some point you get it, you say enough is enough.
Got
and I
GM
think
Kyle
Shuffle. Shanahan has said enough.
And it looks into now the first point before you break into and dive into what are the hypotheticals, right? Because we just don't know. You have the report of the framework for Cleveland and New England, but if we focus on San Francisco specifically, let's forget about, you know, which marginal piece. If it's New England, it would definitely be a marginal piece wide receiver-wise. The report was it was Kendrick Bourne. If it's Cleveland, the report from Mary Kay Cabot was it that you'd have Amari Cooper coming back the other way. But by and large, every single person you look at would tell you, and I don't see any reason to disagree with this, San Francisco is the best collection of pass catchers in the league as it stands right now. And that's not just because of Brandon Ayuk. It's because of George Kittle, his ability to stretch the field as a tight end. It's because of Deebo Samuel, how versatile he is in both the run and the pass game. And it's about the combination of everything that they have in that team that makes them so dangerous. If you take Ayuk out, Michael, where do you rate San Francisco from a pure pass-catching perspective? How far do they drop, and how much does it really impact the power rating here for the Niners going forward?
Well, I think this. I think you're right in everything you said about San Francisco except one thing. They don't have an outside receiver. And if they trade Ayuk on 3rd and 7 or 3rd and 8, when they have to win on the outside and they can't scheme an inside slant or a cut route coming in or an option route to the middle of the field, then all of a sudden they have to win on the outside. They don't have anybody that can do that. Now, maybe Ricky Pearsall can do it. Jacob Cowling's an inside slot receiver. See, one of the reasons why the Niners initially did not want to trade Brandon Ayuk is because they have enough inside receivers. Deebo Samuel's a running back disguised as a receiver, right? Kittle's an inside receiver. McCaffrey's an inside receiver. All these inside, the middle of the field gets clogged. People play one, they play a coverage where it takes away the middle of the field, and now you got to win on the outside. That's what Brandon Ayuk was able to do last year. So they need somebody on the outside. If they were to trade for Amari Cooper, who's an outside receiver, had 1,250 yards last year, averaged 17, and pretty much had similar numbers to Brandon Ayuk, you know, without a quarterback. Remember, without a quarterback.
Absolutely.
Remember this. Joe Flacco threw for almost 500 more yards in one less game than Deshaun Watson threw in his games. So, you know, that would be a real good. The other thing is, too, if they were trade for a Cooper or somebody that had no money left on a contract. See, that's what San Francisco wants. They want to be able to say, okay, next year we're either going to sign this player, we'll let Debo go, we're going to reconfigure our team. But they wanted to have Ayuk this year to get through the year with the inside-outside receiving core.
It's why the two framework deals that are in place, they're not created equal. Cleveland makes so much more sense if you're looking at it on paper than New England. I go to the Patriots side of it, Michael. First off, you would like at least some sort of piece to try and give you that outside presence, like you mentioned. Cooper gives you that if you're trading with Cleveland. New England, I'm sorry, Kendrick Bourne, nothing against you. It doesn't. It's universally the worst wide receiver room in the NFL. And from the New England perspective, you're in a rebuild. They might not say that in the building, but clearly with the personnel, it's not pretty. And you are trying to bank picks. You are trying to use as much as you can to build up a roster that is not going to be solved all the problems they have right now simply by one player, as great of a player as Brandon Ayuk is. So where is this coming from on the New England side? Because there's no way I could wrap my head around why it would make sense for either side. Ayuk's just going to go and, well, is he going to catch passes from Jacoby Brissett and Drake May become a Pro Bowler? And what is it in it for New England here when you're giving up so much capital on the return?
Well, you know, if New England, you're going to give up, if it's a second round pick, you're going to give up maybe the 33rd pick in the draft. You know, that's a significant pick. And then if you have to throw a player in, I mean, Bourne, before he got hurt last year, was the only one who could make plays. I think he's the only receiver on the Patriot team last year that caught a touchdown pass. 13 of their 14 receptions TD-wise all came from tight ends and running backs. So, look, and he's coming off an ACL, so that's a concern. But he was in San Francisco before. They signed him. He can play on the outside. It's not perfect. Don't get me wrong. I mean, if they put Judon in the deal, that would get – where does Judon play in their defense? He has to play defensive end. They don't use a three-man line. He doesn't really fit. He has to be an edge rusher. So I don't know why New England is all hot to trot to get a receiver when their team's not ready to have a big-time right. receiver. You know, I mean, Brandon Ayuk's going to go there like Davante Adams went to the Raiders and complained. Now, look, I promise you, the Raiders tried to get involved with this deal. I promise you the Raiders tried to get involved with this deal. And people would be shocked. The Raiders would be willing to part with one of their star receivers, Davante Adams. But I don't think that's going to happen because I don't think people see the value of taking on that deal as much as ever.
The last thing you want is to become the Larry Fitzgerald trying to catch balls from John Skelton. Now, that was he was already in the play, so it wasn't really on
Flash.
Larry.
I mean, kidding me? The Fordham Flash was exceptional, Ben.
I'm just saying, if you're a wide receiver and you're elite, you look at that and you have nightmares when you watch the film on those balls thrown up by the Fordham Flash toward Larry Fitzgerald. Cleveland-wise here, Michael, if because it makes so much more sense for Cleveland to do this deal than it would for New England when you lay out the personnel and where each franchise is at respectively. Let's say you swap out Cooper, you bring in Ayuk. How does that change the dynamic? Does it change the dynamic for you since you are going somewhat like for like, even though the body type and the general approach in route running is a lot different for Ayuk versus Cooper?
Well, they just got younger, right? They just got younger and they didn't miss a beat. You know, Cooper's over 30 years old. So they got a young player and they still have more in the slot. They still have Judy to play on the other outside. And they feel like now we have a chance to keep our core team together in Joku, whether Nick Chubb comes off a PUP, I don't know. But it all comes down to one guy, right? It all comes down to, can Deshaun Watson make any plays? Is he going to be good enough to throw the football effectively this year when we haven't seen him do it last year? I mean, you know, that's the thing. I mean, we just said this. It's pretty clear. Deshaun Watson, you know, last year threw for less yards, 14 touchdowns, 9 interceptions. He hasn't – in 12 games, he hasn't been very effective. He completed 56% of the passing, whereas Flacco was really good for them. He had 1,616 yards in 5 games. Watson had 11, 15, and 6.
And there you look at now what turns into the main question. Even if Ayuk goes to Cleveland, it is still the Deshaun Watson pieces. I feel like I'm as high as I can possibly be on Cleveland, but there's always the caveat, which is Deshaun Watson. Is there any part of you, Michael, that believes – when you think about the fact we have two of these teams have a deal with a framework in place. Now it is on Brandon Ayuk's hands to see if he can work out a long-term contract. That was the report from Matt Maiocco of NBC. Is the New England part of this simply to sweeten the deal for Cleveland when you think about how illogical it would be for a New England deal to actually get done versus what we've just laid out as the obvious clear path here for success for both sides on Cleveland?
I think New England's in this. I really do. I think that for some reason they think they're a receiver away. Look, I don't know why it surprises people. You know, that's everybody's mentality. We get a receiver, we're going to be fine. You know, look, we just watched the 5 weeks of the New York Football Giants. All they talked about was how we're going to help the offensive line. They signed the Luminor and Runyon and ran to the board to draft another wide receiver. So I think that's been the way the league has kind of gone on, Ben. You know, look, I think the big question about New England is who replaces Belichick, not only as a head coach, but who replaces him as a defensive coordinator as well.
I think sometimes we can't conflate optimism with delusion. I mean, that's how I describe New England. Like, let's be real here. Like, what would that get you? I mean, it's totally delusional.
No, well, I think the great Bruce Springsteen said it best. Sometimes I can't tell my courage from my desperation.
That's a very good
think
one.
New England thinks they're being courageous, and you and I think they're being desperate.
I feel like I don't think that's just us that believe that way. We will have much more to get into on this topic because it is only the start with that report coming out late last night. As Michael alluded to, Matthew Judon, Kendrick Bourne held out of practice today in camp for New England. As you would expect, Brandon Ayuk not practicing either today in camp for San Francisco. A lot more to get sorted out in the coming days, we figure, on the Brandon Ayuk San Francisco saga. When we come back, we have a whole lot of preseason news coming up. Week one kicks off on Thursday. News or noise? Some quarterback depth chart news. We'll break it down next on the Lombardi Line.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here's your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Is it news?
Corleone is a man who insists on hearing bad news immediately.
Or just noise?
Are you going to act like this is news?
Just noise. This is noise.
Let's separate the impactful from the insignificant with one simple question. News or noise?
A whole lot of noise this time of year in particular, Michael, now that we're a couple days away from week one of the NFL preseason getting underway. A couple games on Thursday, and as a result, we're getting depth charts out now as far of news or noise. What these notations are, do we actually think they're real? Does it matter? Is it news or is it noise? The first part of this, we are seeing a training camp battle, even though the odds would say Bo Nix in Denver very highly likely to get that week one job over a $4 favorite to win it over Jarrett Stidham. If you also want to include Zach Wilson in the mix, but all the reports are Wilson is a distant third there. The first preseason depth chart show, Michael, it's out. And on the depth chart, you have Jarrett Stidham, QB number one for this week, Denver in Indianapolis on Sunday. News or noise to you?
I think it's noise because I think we know where Sean Payton is with Bo Nix. I think what he wants to do with Bo Nix, he's going to do. Whether he makes him the starter, I don't think he wants to give Bo Nix a job and say you're number one. But I think he's going to give him enough time and enough reps. I think the configuration of the line is more important to me in Denver than who starts at quarterback. Will he put Bo Nix in while the starters and the offensive line are still there? Because remember, Payton comes from the Bill Parcells school of you got to get your offensive line ready. So that to me is more significant than who takes the first snap and who takes the second series snap.
As much as it looks to be ugly on the surface for Denver, at the very least, offensive line, what'd you say, Michael, seems to be the best thing Denver can hang its hat on with the sort of pieces they bring back and the additions they've made. It seems to me like the one unit you can clearly say is top 15 positionally across the league.
Well, yeah, I mean, like I was on Mitch and Pauly today and they were talking about somebody said the Jets were a top five offensive line. I don't know what tape they're watching. Like, I don't even see that. Whereas I do think, you know, with Mernez, the kid they just re-signed to a huge contract. McGlinchey is not a great right tackle, but he's a good right tackle. Bowles holds too much, but they've serviced and Ben Powers comes through for. So this is a good offensive line. I think it's in the top 15 without a doubt. It's better than the Jet line on paper right now for somebody who thinks the Jets a top five line. You haven't watched any games of the Jets last year.
And especially on the interior as well. Quinn Miners was a top-rated guard last year for Denver. Really high on him coming back in 2024. That's the sort of insight we bring you here on News or Noise, breaking down teams' offensive line. Forget about the QB1 on the depth charts. And Mike, well, I really.
I mean, Ben, I wrote about it today on VSiN on a column. I mean, to me, that's one of the ways. Like, you know, you've power rated your teams. I wait until power rate the teams. I know where they were from last year, but I've got to figure out what's the situation at quarterback and what's their line look like. And the third thing is the coaches making a difference before you can adjust their power rankings before week one.
100%. That's why you should check out that article Michael wrote, How to Evaluate the Preseason. It is a great refresher, especially if you are ready to rock, ready to watch some preseason and formulate some more opinions now that we'll actually see some real football. I have that on the website, VSiN.com. And you have to be a VSiN Pro subscriber, too, to get that. We have a fresh offer for you right now. In case you didn't know about it, 3 years for VSiN Pro. Get it for $350, which is a pretty awesome offer. You're getting the down payment now, but you get 3 years of VSiN Pro. Go to VSiN.com/subscribe for that as well. Okay, on to our next No Way or News or Noise piece. We had a graphic here that says No Way or No Doubt. But this, I guess, can also be news or noise as we talk about Jim Harbaugh. Here was a soundbite as they, of course, it is Camp Michael. They're asking him about what happened at Michigan and does he just still deny any wrongdoing there? Here's what Jim had to say.
Never lie, never cheat, never steal. I was raised with that lesson. I have raised my family on that lesson. I have preached that lesson to the teams that I've coached. No one's perfect. If you stumble, you apologize, and you make it right. Today, I do not apologize. I did not participate, was not aware, nor complicit in those said allegations. So for me, it's back to work and attacking with an enthusiasm unknown to mankind.
That's a soundbite making the rounds. Michael, news or noise for you?
Unknown to mankind. That's his great favorite line. Look, I love it. Look, I think to me, you know, he is, that's who he is. There's one thing about Jim Harbaugh. There's no facade there. He is as authentic as it comes. And, you know, with enthusiasm unknown to mankind is what he'll do. He'll make that team better. I think it's going to be a fun game. Seattle and the Chargers, right? We know the Chargers are going to come out running the football. And we know Seattle couldn't play the run last year. If there's one preseason game you really want to kind of watch, this is the one. Because both teams have to strengthen the areas that were deficient last year, and it happens on the same field at the same time.
That's a really good point, and that's a game coming up. Just updating the odds screen here on that, Michael. For the most part, we're seeing, even in a game in L.A., the Seahawks slightest of favorites here by 1.5. 35 is the total there. One of the lower preseason totals we actually have for week one. Something
worth
watching.
The clock's going to keep running. That's why that total's so low. Both teams are going to want to run the football. And look, you know, I think to me, we know the Harbaugh tradition, you know, like the Hank Williams tradition, family tradition is to win. They're going to want to win, right? It's a tradition that they believe in. So Jim, even though with Ethan Stick and whoever else he gets put in the game, they're going to try to win the football game.
We also have no idea how will Mike McDonald, and this is also one of the specific preseason things to watch out for. When you have a rookie head coach, a lot of the younger coaches we've seen trending, Michael, towards they don't want to play their guys. They don't really care about the winning in the preseason. And that's fine. It just seems to be more of the, you know, how the recent sort of the general kind of strategy has played out here. How aggressively will Mike McDonald play it? I'm a little surprised to see so many people. I get why, because of the quarterback depth chart for the Chargers, but we have had a lot of early line movement here, people backing Seattle, and we don't really know how McDonald's going to plan it on it with his guys. I've seen that as high as 2 in the market some places.
Yeah, I mean, I think you got to be really careful about the preseason betting until you really get it, especially with the new coaches, to know what you're betting on. Like, I don't know if they're going to want to play it. I mean, look, Zach Taylor's a guy that, you know, just kind of wanted to get through the game. But we'll talk about this later in the show. Their quarterback room's good, so maybe they will. But I think you got to be really careful and study how a guy plays the preseason, especially the fourth quarter of those games.
Next up on News or Noise, continuing on this Tuesday edition of the Lombardi Line, for the New York Jets, that's not just Brandon Ayuk, who is the only player not happy about a contract. We have a number of situations around the league, but Robert Saleh does not appear to be all that concerned on Hassan Reddick's holdout for a defense who is very, very good, but certainly could use a guy like Hassan Reddick anchoring that line. Here was a quote from Robert Saleh speaking with media the other day.
I don't know, you know, because there's examples of players who, you know, like Aaron Donald, Chris Jones a couple years ago didn't show up till week one, and they did just fine. So, you know, when you get to that stage in your career, I don't have the right answer for you on that one. Players come and go all the time and are, unfortunately, You're always having to make adjustments on the fly, but I'll say it again. That's the it's not the easiest position, but the last position that I'm worried about getting caught up to speed.
Okay, last position, Robert Saleh, worried about getting caught up to speed. News or noise for you on that?
Well, I mean, look, Riddick was a problem for Philly last year. You know, for all the conversation about, you know, the Eagles last year, 2 years ago when they had the dominant defensive front, 70 sacks, led the league, 60 of them came from their defensive line. 11% of the time they were sacking the quarterback. Last year that went down to 6% of the time. And it was very pedestrian-like at the end of the year. Riddick was a problem for him. And, you know, look, they inherited this problem. They knew this was a problem. It wasn't like they didn't see the iceberg. They saw the iceberg. They just kept running into it. Like, it makes no sense why. And Riddick has been very clear. And I don't understand why a guy would be willing to have over $1 million of fines. But I don't know why the Jets would have traded for the guy without a deal. Like, it makes no sense. Now, the Jets will tell you we've got Will McDonald, who was a first-round pick last year. We've got Jermaine Johnson, who was a first-round pick. We've signed Kinlaw. You know, we've got Michael Clemens, who's still a good player. But really, they made the trade. They lost Bryce Huff, who I think was their best rusher. They lose John Franklin Myers, who was one of their best defensive linemen. Are we sure the Jets front's going to be as good as it was last year? Those two players were critical for their team.
It's a big reason why people were saying this is now the new number one defensive line in the league. It was not simply the youth, where there are expectations. You have McDonald taking the next step, thinking about Jermaine Johnson too. But yeah, the whole reason, the headline was, okay, Jets, it's because of Hassan Reddick. They are now your top D line in the game. And with him not there, it's also a new system too. It's one thing. I mean, the examples that Robert Saleh cite, I mean, Aaron Donald, Chris Jones, those are guys in the same system, knew exactly what they were doing. I get that you can let the athleticism take over to a degree here, but this is a guy who has not gotten the reps and has not been in the system before. That's the other part of it that Robert Saleh is kind of conveniently forgetting here.
Well, I don't know how they send Robert Saleh up to a microphone without at least some kind of notes in front of him. I really don't. I mean, this guy's news waiting to happen. He's a disaster when he gets in front of it. And for Jet fans, you feel bad because he can't think quick on his feet at all.
He just needs to borrow a page from the Deshaun Foster book. Just say, all right, hey, guys, we're a football team. We're based in New York, and just leave it at that. Let people make fun about him instead of saying things, yes, like that. I'm always not concerned at all about Holdout, who they are relying on to be a really, really big piece this year in New York. Speaking of guys based in New York, Will Hill does an awesome job on the Shoulda Bet More podcast. Daily bets on all sorts of sports. Great VSiN contributor. Will will join us next. Get his thoughts on the state of the Brandon Ayuk saga in San Francisco. Any preseason angles Will's looking to attack, we'll get into it next year on the Lombardi Line.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
The Tuesday edition of the Lombardi Line rolls on right here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. I'm Ben, in for Stormy. Michael Lombardi is here. We've had a lot of NFL news and notes coming down the wire today, Michael, led by Brandon Ayuk, who the report late last night from NBC Sports Bay Area is close. The 49ers have a framework deal in place with both the Cleveland Browns and the New England Patriots. Want to get Will Hill's perspective on all that, as well as some preseason bets, some early regular season bets, and a little bit of college football as we go out to our progressive guest line from the Shoulda Bet More podcast. I love doing shows with Will. Great VSiN contributor. Will's back with us at Not The Will Hill. And we were talking this Ayuk potential trade here, Will, at the very start of the show. What do you make, especially that San Francisco, they've got it down to these two teams who are in wildly different places as franchises if we're comparing it between the Browns and the Patriots?
Yeah, and look, if he goes to the Browns, I mean, I still don't think he has a quarterback to play with, so I don't know how appealing either situation is for Ayuk. And I just always been under the assumption that this is a lot of noise, that San Francisco is going to run it back one more time, a little bit of last dance style where, hey, you have Purdy on the rookie deal. Eventually, you can't pay all these guys. I understand that, and they got Pearsall to replace him, but I would have thought they would have made one more run at it. We'll see. Maybe that still happens. I mean, you definitely have to downgrade Ayuk. He's tremendous. Lombardi, I think you had the stat. I've heard you cite where 82-83% of his catches go for either a first down or a touchdown. He's a tremendous blocker. He's great after the catch. And look, I know San Francisco's got an embarrassment of riches, but Debo's always hurt. If you get rid of Ayuk, I mean, they're still a contender, but with everything considered that, you know, the Super Bowl hangover, the rest disadvantage, they're at a massive rest disadvantage, teams coming off byes, short weeks, all that kind of thing. It's a hit for them. So I mean, it's not a death blow, but it would be a hit, I think, if they lost him for sure.
Well, if they don't get somebody back, I think you're so right. I think the blocking is so critical in what they do there. But look, Will, I mean, from my experience, if you can't get a guy to sign, you can't sign him. I think you could have a one-year plan. You could have a two-year plan. You could have an eight-year plan. If the guy thinks he's worth $35 million a year and you're offering 27 and he thinks he's better than DJ Moore, then you're just not going to get a deal done. I do think that, you know, they need somebody on the outside. But if they trade for Amari Cooper, people say, well, that's a great trade. Well, you got to get Amari Cooper to block like Brandon Ayuk. That's one of the things I think that's really important in this deal is they have to find somebody who can fill the role on the outside on third down, but also help out on blocking to help McCaffrey in their run game. Because with this offensive line, their run game is all outside. They rarely run in between the tackles. They have to run the edges because that offensive line is still their weak link. We're focused on Ayuk, but I think if they don't get Trent Williams done, I think that's when all of a sudden things go bad.
And maybe that's why we've seen the movement on the Jets 49ers week one, which I think opened six and a half some spots. It's down to four and a half. So you can say, hey, if they trade Ayuk, if they, you know, if this or that happens, they're gonna take a hit and you bet the Jets. But I think maybe that's why we've seen that move, that line move in that direction to begin with.
It's interesting that Circa's down to five, couple offshores down to five, one offshore down to 4.5. Most of the market in general, 5.5. So that could be one, depending on your outs, where you're at. Could be one to get out in front of, depending on where the news goes here from Brandon Ayuk. Speaking of big line moves.
Dead zone, though. I mean, that's a dead zone. Those aren't key numbers. It's not, you're not dealing 6, 3, 7, correct. 4, 4.5, 5. It's, every half point matters. I understand that. But 4, 4.5, 5, that's usually the kind of the dead zone where games usually don't land. Never say never.
Yeah, we say in a few more games land 5 relative to previous years, but you're right. It's not overwhelming as if to say 3 or 7 that we're on those key numbers. That's a very good point, Will. And you are someone who's been getting involved with a lot of preseason line moves because you tend to see lower limits, wild swings based on a couple bets here, and one that moved the most, at least originally. I saw the Vikings Raider game. Vikings 1.5 point favorite on the open at some shops. This got all the way out to Raiders -5.5. We had the report that comes out the other day. We'll have one quarter apiece for Aiden O'Connell and Gardner Minshew at QB for the Raiders. Line's back down to 4 now. What piqued your interest here in a game that's had as much movement as any there in week one?
Wow, I can't keep up with this line movement because, like you said, this was Saturday morning. This was Vikings favored by 1.5, and I know a service that released the Raiders as a pick. It steamed. Raiders were 2.5, 3-point favorites. Then somebody else, a major service, released the Raiders again, which got it up to 5, 5.5 or whatever. I just think it's a bit too far. It's a bridge too far here where, okay, Raiders are playing their guys. They're playing their quarterbacks for a quarter each. But the Viking quarterback rotation's not that bad when you look at Hall and Mullins and McCarthy. Hall and Mullins are guys that had to start last year. Unfortunately, I watched it, so trust me, they started. It wasn't pretty, but Hall can at least run around a little bit. And I know O'Connell typically doesn't care about the preseason, but look, I mean, Lombardi, you know Brian Flores. If you're on the field for Flores, second string, third string, fourth string, it doesn't matter. Those guys are going to play hard. And in a preseason environment where there's just not going to be a lot of points, Vikings are home. You're getting now, what, 4, 4, 4.5, whatever it is. I just think it's too many points. I'll take the points here in Minnesota.
Yeah, plus I think you're right. Well, the matchup, the offensive line for the Raiders isn't any good either. Colton Miller's not going to play. I mean, they've got issues in their offensive line. That's a concern. So I don't understand why this line ballooned. Yeah, I get it. You're following the quarterbacks, Aiden O'Connell, Gardner Minshew. But look, you go to Nick Mullins, you go to Jared Hall. It'll be a problem for the Raiders when they put their backups on the field. I think there's no doubt about that. I think you have to be really careful. It's the same thing with New England. Like, how is New England a 4.5 point favorite against Carolina?
Yeah, that's another one. Open to maybe a pick them, New England
six
by
and
one.
A half now, Will.
Wow.
6.5.
Yeah, even since we came on the air, Michael, it's crazy.
Geez, I had it at 4.5 this morning when I was doing research for the show, Ben. It's 6.5. Like, how is New England 6.5 better against even Toledo? I mean, think about it.
That's amazing. Yeah. And that's the thing. If you're laying 4, I mean, you could say, hey, that's sharp money coming in on New England at 4.5. At 4.5, that's not sharp money, because if the money was that sharp, you would have bet them when it was 1 or 2. You're betting them at 4.5. You're just you're late. You're the last guy at the buffet. That's tough. I'm surprised it moved that much.
Man. And you're talking too about the lowest total we have on the board in week one. 33 yeah. and a half points are less valuable as you rise up and up and up with the point spread. You're having to lay 6.5. Crazy. Largest spread we have. That's one of the two games on Thursday as well. 7 Eastern, New England hosting Carolina. Not only will you bet in preseason, you're also getting out in front of some week one line moves here. And we've had a small flip of favorites, but we're crossing through zero. It's not like you've missed the party by any means here. If you're looking for that Minnesota-New York match, matchup week one where the Giants opened slight favorites back in April with the schedule release. Now we're seeing Minnesota at most shops about a point favorite there. You agree with the move going to Minnesota on the road?
I do. I'm going back to my Vikings here. I think I'm just such an optimist. I'm just such a naturally optimistic person that I just have to bet my Vikings here. No, I mean, look, I don't have some brilliant or profound handicap, but when you look at the rosters, and I have all the respect in the world for Dable, I thought he's done a tremendous job getting blood out of a stone pretty much the last 2 years. But just look at the team. I mean, the Vikings have two really good receivers, good offensive line, players in the front seven on defense. The Giants have, Neighbors looks like he's going to be a good player, a player here or there on defense. They are weak on the offensive line, weak at skill guys. They lose Barkley. Vikings just have a much, much more talented team. And the Giants, that's not a home field, even though that's a really loyal fan base. That's not like a raucous home crowd where you give them, a ton of movement, a ton of adjustment for home field advantage. So to me, Vikings, it's simple, but Vikings just have a much better team. I'll lay the point. There's some cheap money lines out there. I think the Vikings win week one, and you look at that schedule. They better week one because they better win week one because it gets pretty tough afterwards.
Michael, still some pick'ems out there. Your last chance. You know, I love the 7-point teaser. Get that in there before it flips.
I think to me, Will's right here because look, Brian Flores. One thing we know, Daniel Jones can't handle pressure, and if the Raiders' offensive line from last year, Illuminor and Van Noy, are over there starting on the right side of the Giant line, have they really improved their line the way they talked about in Hard Knocks? Of course they haven't. So I'll go with Flores to attack Daniel Jones, make him speed it up. It'll be a 3-interception game. Let's focus. The Colorado's been in the news a lot today about the program and about what's going on inside that building. And trust me, I've heard a lot of different things inside that building. Deion doesn't know the name of the players. It's not really tightly run. It's kind of a little bit one for all. Players have transferred out that were coming in. You like them under 5.5. Tell us why.
Yeah, for what you just said, basically, you're describing it. It sounds like a circus, and I'm going to bet against the circus. I know that the ball bounced their way early last year. They got very fortunate with turnovers. They were one of the more fortunate teams in terms of turnovers in general in the country. And that TCU game, really, I mean, TCU outplayed them. Everyone thought TCU was, hey, they're coming off a national champion appearance. That was not the same TCU team, and it kind of set the tone for these expectations for Colorado. This is still a flawed team. They had trouble protecting for Shedeur Sanders. If he misses two or three games, they're in a lot of trouble. And if you just look at the schedule, there's no gimmies. Now, there's no games where they absolutely cannot win. Big 12 is just sort of designed that way. Not designed that way, but it's just structured that way where all of these teams are pretty close. But these games that were easy last year are much tougher at Nebraska, at Colorado State. The conference games are tough. And I just don't know with that culture, with that team, if they're 1-2 or they're 2-3, is that going to be, kumbaya and everything's fine and they're on to the next game, or is there going to be finger pointing? Is that thing going to combust? That seems like a combustible situation. I will bet on it combusting. I like under 5.5. You're getting plus money too.
Yeah, only about a touchdown favorite week one too, Will, against one of the best FCS teams in the country, North Dakota State. Then you go at Nebraska, at Colorado State. You don't think some revenge will be on the mind first game in forever in Fort Collins, part of that rivalry? I think so. And Will,
Nebraska is a fun one too. Yeah, Nebraska, I think that's a Saturday night game on NBC. That's going to be a fun one week too.
You don't think Matt Rhule will also get his guys up for that as well? Follow Will at Not The Will Hill. Check out the Should Have Bet More podcast as well. Will has his insights are included as well. We have all sorts of best bets in our college football betting guide, which is out now. Over 200 pages where we cover every single FBS team, all 134 of them. Will, part of that, you can check out the guide. Also, the NFL guide out as well, as it has been for a few weeks. Will, always great to catch up, man. Appreciate the insights. I know we will be talking very, very soon in the run-up to the 2024 football season.
All right, see you guys. Thanks for having me.
Will Hill with us here on the Lombardi Line. And when we come back, Michael, let's get into some of your quarterback rooms, your top five for this year. There's one that might surprise some people. We'll discuss based on the depth of different teams' quarterbacks when we come back.
Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here's your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
If you're in need of a contest proxy, talk to the experienced team at Winner's Circle Proxy, VSiN's preferred proxy partner. You can join the Circa Survivor and Circa Million contest featuring $16 million in guaranteed cash prizes with only one trip to Las Vegas before the NFL season kicks off. Winner's Circle Proxy is now in its ninth year of providing trusted proxy services to the top contest players, including the 2023 Survivor and Million contest winners. Plus, don't miss out on Circa's Ultimate Contest Weekend coming up August 22nd through the 24th. Packed with exclusive events, room discounts, live broadcasts, and more. Winner's Circle Proxy clients will get special perks like monthly access to VSiN Pro, stadium swim passes, free drink tickets, and cool sign-up bag stuffers. So head on over to winnerscircleproxy.com and book your appointment. winnerscircleproxy.com. It's almost that time of year, Michael, where we start talking Survivor Week 1 strategy, because you know Week 1 more so than any week. We'll see a ton of people knocked out, but also the discussion about who you use in Survivor Week 1 is absolutely fascinating. It never gets old, even to someone like me who's gotten knocked out multiple times Week 1. I don't care. I'm going back to the well here in 2024.
Yeah, I think to me, what I would suggest about what looks obvious, what looks simple, stay away from. Everybody's going to be on the Bengals, whether 9.5-point favorite, yep. All that stuff. The line's moved. New England's uncertain. I will say this. Zach Taylor is 0-4 the last 2 years in opening games. 0-4 in the first 2 weeks. I'm a little worried about that. Do you remember, Ben, when Pittsburgh went back in there with the great Mitchell Trubisky playing quarterback and Joe Burrow was a healthy starter in the opening game and he threw, what, 5 interceptions and Minkah Fitzpatrick took one back to the house. The game went to overtime and Pittsburgh won that game. Like, I'm not saying that could happen, but I think there's going to be other times to bet against New England pretty much most of the year. I just wouldn't use Cincy on this one.
Purely from a game theory perspective as well. You are not using the giant, you want to call it a bingo square. That doesn't really exist in the NFL, but as close as it comes to that, since it is the largest spread, you're going against the grain. That's usually the smart play to attack this stuff. With that being the only spread we have right now over a touchdown, Bills Cardinals is the second highest. That's actually gotten some love here toward Arizona down to 6.5. You did, though, include Michael Cincinnati as part of your top five quarterback rooms. We'll go through these. It's no particular order. It's not like an exact top five, but I think it's worthwhile here as part of the series of articles you're writing right now on the website, VSiN.com, breaking down what you're looking for in preseason. And it's not just evaluating the starting quarterback, because we have seen more than double the number of teams in the league, 32 teams, way more than 32 and even more than 64 quarterbacks have suited up each of the last 2 years, Michael, for all these respective teams around the league.
Right. So I think anytime somebody asks you to put together a top five list, there has to be a criteria to the list, right? What is the criteria to the list? And I think to me, you have to have a good starter and you have to have a really good backup. Okay. And I think, like, let's take, for example, Indianapolis. Look, I think Flacco, based on what he did last year, really good backup. I just don't know where Anthony Richardson is, so I couldn't put them in there. Trevor Lawrence is a good starter, but is Mac Jones a really good backup, considering that he threw all those interceptions and he looked terrible? I mean, Mason Rudolph played better last year for the Steelers. He might be better than Will Levis. So how do you put them in there? So I tried to go with what I thought was a well-rounded room, right? The players that you could count on. Like, I didn't put the Jets in there because I don't know where Aaron Rodgers is. I want to see him move around, but they certainly would qualify as having a good room. They would have a room that they would hold their breath because Tyrod Taylor's often prone to injury and Aaron Rodgers is coming off an Achilles. So what I try to do in this is just look at the overall depth. And obviously Kansas City with Mahomes is great. Sure. And Wentz has played what we've seen Wentz play well enough. Now, I'm not saying he's a great player, but we've seen that. Okay. And I think we've also seen Andy Reid coach the backup, Chad Henne. Remember the 3rd and 17 that he scrambles for and gets the first down? You know, and you know, makes plays when they had to. I think Cleveland's quarterback room, even though Winston throws interceptions and Watson and all that, I think that's pretty good. Obviously, Houston has a good room because Davis Mills has started. Case Keenum took a team to a divisional playoff game, right? And they have C.J. Stroud. Last year, Jake Browning was really impressive. This might be the best quarterback room in the league. Jake Browning. You know, I think Jake Browning would get offers out there if he were available as a free agent the way he played last year. I'm not saying it's great, but I think it was really good. And then, of course, Miami. I think Mike White, and with those receivers, I wouldn't be surprised if anybody went in there and played well. I mean, they went into the playoff game up in Buffalo, And I, you know, and look, they couldn't throw the football very effectively, but they were able to with Skylar Thompson. They were able to run the ball. They had some things because their skill players are so good.
I'm glad you laid out the criteria too, because when you think about the one team that probably for, you know, for most people, again, this is not just the starting quarterback, but most people are going to look at this list and go, okay, yeah, this all makes sense. But you know, Cleveland, the numbers have been so bad on Deshaun Watson. Yes, what the head coach Kevin Stefanski got out of five different quarterbacks last year, it was the reason why he was named Coach of the Year with how impressive that was. But we're looking at this and going, okay, it's not like it's still Joe Flacco. It's not like it's the same exact pieces behind a Deshaun Watson. Jameis Winston has, you know, he's been a turnover machine, but he's at least as competent of a backup as you can get here. I think that's, to me, the one team where people are looking at is, okay, is this more of a belief in Cleveland? Not necessarily just because Deshaun Watson has to be great, but it's because they at least have serviceable options behind him when you factor in how good of a roster it is around the rest of that quarterback position.
Plus Tyler Huntley. I mean, Tyler Huntley's won games in the league. I mean, he's the four-string quarterback behind Thompson Robinson. So the depth of their quarterback room is impressive. Whereas, okay, Buffalo. I didn't put Buffalo on the list. Josh Allen's a top two quarterback in the league, no question. But I've watched too much of Mitchell Trubisky to think you're going to win any games when he goes in the game, right? I mean, how are you going to win when he walks in the game? Okay, Lamar is a top five quarterback. We had him in a blue chip ratings. But Josh Johnson is 125 years old. You're putting him in a game?
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, you're going to put him in a game? You feel good? Emory Jones, the kid from Florida who went to Arizona State, the third-string quarterback. You know, Devin Leary. I don't see that. So I think what that's why the criteria for me was important, because I wanted to see if they had depth. Like I think Seattle's quarterback room's decent. I think you got Geno Smith, who can win games. He's proven that. Sam Howell's a good backup. Where San Francisco, if they go to Joshua Dobbs, you got to worry about that, right?
It's a great point. Probably the one other team, if you're looking at really, really good, highly rated quarterbacks, it would be the Chargers, who missed out on your top five, where, yes, Justin Herbert, very good. But now, and we're about to see this put to the test in preseason, especially with Herbert out with the plantar fascia injury. What is an Easton Stick has been a question asked many times over the last couple of years. But what is there behind Herbert? And there's a big reason why they're not, I'm sure, not close to cracking your top five because of that.
Well, I think other people would say, Lombardi, why didn't you put Atlanta in there? I mean, they put a lot of resources in there, and certainly they have. Yeah. And if Kirk Cousins is good with Penix as the backup with Taylor Heineke, that certainly would be in the top five quarterback rooms because of the depth. I'm not saying they're going to be because of the excellence, but I think that would be something to consider there. But I don't know where they are with Cousins. I've heard reports reliably that he really doesn't plant and drive off the foot yet. Remember, his surgery was way later than Rodgers.
And that's the one thing we're all wondering on Kirk Cousins. Whereas it's funny, you know, the early reports in camp, it's been very, very focused on Joe Burrow. A team, Cincinnati, makes your top five list here as far as total quarterback rooms. We're not talking starters, talking full rooms here. But a lot of has been made, Michael, of how the ball's not totally spinning off the hand the way you would like to see, how it hasn't been traditionally for Joe Burrow. But yeah, the thing on Kirk Cousins, it's you know, as much as being able to spin the ball is hugely important for a quarterback, also being able to drive when you're coming off an ankle or an Achilles injury and you are a veteran like a Cousins, I'm a little surprised we haven't seen as much coverage on that. And until you just mentioned it a second ago, like, I haven't heard anything definitive about how Cousins has actually looked besides just the classic, oh yeah, he's fine, he's getting along great with everybody, he's in great shape, because that to me has to be the biggest question you ask in an NFC South where it is a division filled with question marks more so than anything.
No question. And I think to me, a lot of it is, you know, it's hard to understand who helps us in this area. You know, when we had a Bengal beat writer on, he was willing to admit that the ball wasn't spinning off of Joe Burrow's wrist like it has in the past. I think that's something to be concerned about. I think you have to worry about that. That's why, you know, where college is so challenging, that's why you should really invest in our betting guide, because college, we don't get injury reports. We don't really know who's playing and who's not. You know, and I think if there's some, like we've talked about this yesterday, there's rumors going around that, you know, this player might be hurt at Arizona, this player might be hurt somewhere else. So you have to be really careful. And I think when you're watching these practices, you just can't assume everybody's 100%.
Yep. Got to go down to the local diner or a VFW post to figure out which lineman is banged up in college football camp. We have the luxury of having lots of reporting as far as the NFL. Who is on your we didn't do the actual graphic for your bottom five rooms, but who is as bad of a situation as you have right now if you're talking full rooms right now in the NFL?
Well, I mean, I think to me, when I looked at it, I thought, Matthew Stafford's really good, but who's playing behind him, right? I think you got to worry about that. How about the Saints? Derek Carr, and then you got Jake Kerner. You know, I mean, think. How about your Packers? We talked about that before the show. Jordan Love to go to Sean Clifford. How about the Bears? How about the Bears? Caleb Williams, we don't know about. Maybe Brett Rippon is going to be based on the way he played in the game. Or how about the Giants? Tommy DeVito, don't sleep on him now.
Sean Clifford, not the best cramp so far by our reports for Green Bay. It's kind of a big gap between Clifford and Jordan Love there. That's hour number one in the books. When we come back, what is on Michael's mind? Will Brandon Ayuk actually get dealt? Talk about some other news around the league in the preseason here on the Lombardi Line.